All across America and around the world, welcome to America's number one veterans program, Veterans Radio. And now here's your host, Dale Thromberg.
Good morning, America, and happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers out there. And it's also Military Spouse Day, and so we're going to be doing a lot of talking about women today, and which is always a good topic.
That's always the favorite topic, absolutely.
And so, anyway, we're going to be, as I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about moms in the military, also moms of kids that are serving in the military, and some of the effects that their deployments have had on them over the years. We're also going to be talking with an author of a book about America's women pilots during World War II, of the American and Soviet pilots during World War II, the WASPs. And it's a great read, and I'm anxious to talk with Amy Strebe, is her name. And she will be on later on in the program. And joining me in the studio right now is our good friend, Colonel Christine Cook.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Christine, do you want me to call me Christine or Cook or Colonel? Whatever
Colonel,
you want to
say. Whatever.
You know, with the helmet stuff. Anyway, Colonel Cook is a member of the United States Army Reserves, and she is currently working at the Strategic Studies Institute at the Army War College, and she was deployed to Kuwait in 2004. This thing's been going on for a long time.
It sure has.
You start thinking about that. And we have had Christine on in the past to talk about a number of things. In fact, we even had her husband on a couple of years ago to talk about military spouses and what they have to go through with raising children. And that's why I asked Christine to come on today, because she's got two teenagers now, correct?
Well, a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, they're there.
Yes, they are.
They're there.
10 and going on 16.
Yes,
right?
That's true.
And the 14 is probably going on, 35, I remember
meeting
her the one time. And so we're going to be talking about that as we go through the program. We wanted to remind you that if you have somebody that you would like to honor for Mother's Day, let us know, and we will do that. I don't have the phone number in front of me right this second, and I will we'll get that to you in just a moment. I did have a quick announcement to make. That was that I got a call from an agency locally. This is the St. Luke Lutheran Church in Ann Arbor, is celebrating Armed Forces Sunday on March 17th with a special service at 10:15. And they meet at the Whitmore Lake High School. It's 7430 Whitmore Lake Road in Whitmore Lake, Michigan. And they have done this annually, and we think it's going to be a great... Did I say April?
You said March.
I said March? Oh, okay. Good live radio then. for those of you that are looking at the flyer that said Sunday, it's Saturday. We're here now. Anyway, I'll take that back. Armed Forces Sunday at Living Water on May 17th, 2009. St. Luke Lutheran Church of Ann Arbor, Whitmore Lake High School, 7430 Whitmore Lake Road in Whitmore Lake, Michigan. The phone number is 248-437-0727. If you ever have any events that you want us to announce on Veterans Radio, send us an email and we'll get you out on the air. And hopefully that will work out better for you. I did have a story that's been occurring recently about the military spouses. And the president made a proclamation yesterday honoring the military spouses. And so you can go to the White House website, whitehouse.gov. And you can read that. The guy's got a website up there. This guy's much better technologically than we are, obviously. And that is up there, and to honor military spouses. And the moms out there, all you military moms, we greatly appreciate what you do in supporting the military. And, Bob, I'm going to go to you to talk. Oh, no, I got another thing. First, I've got that. Jiminy Christmas. Andy, I wanted to introduce you. Andy is working our board for us today.
Always forgetting about me, huh?
Yeah, well, you're out there in the shadows of the
engineers world.
But we did have an opportunity to talk to the governor of Michigan, and we're going to replay a conversation that I had with her earlier this week. So, Andy, if you would play that.
This is Governor Jennifer Granholm, and I want to wish a happy Mother's Day to the women who are mothers who are serving overseas, to the wives of the servicemen who are overseas, who are mothers, and to the mothers of our servicemen and women who are overseas, all of whom are connected or gave birth to or are married to heroes. Thank you for raising and supporting these great men and women who are serving our nation. Happy Mother's Day to you all, and let us pray that you are home safe and sound for the next Mother's Day. God bless you all.
Thank you very much, and of course, again, a happy Mother's Day to you.
And that was Governor Granholm of Michigan, wishing all of our military moms and spouses and so forth.
This is about, what, Mother's our Day. fifth or sixth Mother's Day?
Yes, it is.
Six, I think this is our sixth.
2003 we started, so 2004 would have been six. The first one that we did a Mother's Day on. And it's always an adventure.
Yes, it is.
It is always an adventure. You know, we're going to have some great stories to tell as soon as we come back from our first break. But, Bob, you're going to do our welcome home. So, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, Dale. Welcome home each week on Veterans Radio. We welcome home servicemen and women who've been stationed around the world in the service of our country. Dateline, Fort Hood, Texas, for Sergeant Carlos Perez, 5th Battalion, 82nd Field Artillery, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 1st Cavalry Division. His time in Iraq is over. As he and 30 others from his brigade returned to hundreds of cheering family members, fellow soldiers, and other guests at Cameron Field, Texas. The soldiers came back as their unit's torch party and flew back with a much larger group of soldiers from 4th Infantry Division's Combat Aviation Brigade. They shared their welcome home ceremony in front of the division headquarters. 4th BCT's flights are scheduled to go on for the next several weeks, bringing the rest of the brigade's soldiers back to Fort Hood, Texas. Welcome Home is sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I'd like to wish a very special Veterans Radio Happy Mother's Day to Colonel Cheryl Ludwa, who is in Kuwait right now, and a Lieutenant Colonel Linda Singh, who has been deployed to Bosnia. Happy Mother's Day to you. I got an email from one of our listeners, and I wanted to just read a little bit of it. I've got two of them here that I want to talk about briefly. This is from our good friend Joan Ford. It says, hello again. I forgot to mention I'd like to honor all the mothers of the military sons and daughters. We thank them so much for all of their care in raising such courageous and sacrificing women and men. Thank you to all the mothers out there caring for our military who are ill, away from home, and everyone back here in the good old USA. No one can replace our mothers. That's from Joan Ford. And the other thing I wanted to mention, and I can't do justice to this, I won't even attempt, to do it. But Julia Ward Howe, who wrote the original proclamation for Mother's Day, really wasn't necessarily about mothers. It was about trying. It was written shortly after the Civil War, and the idea is that they didn't want to have war again. And so if you'd like to read her proclamation, which I found really interesting, you can go to mothersdayforpeace.com. That's mothersdayforpeace.com. And it's a really nice, very powerful poem. And like I said, I would not do it justice, so I'm not even going to attempt to read that.
I could try for you, but yeah.
Yes, we don't want to do that. We're back, as I mentioned, on Veterans Radio. Our guest is Colonel Christine Cook. And I asked Christine to come on to talk about what it was like to be deployed as a mom. And going back again, you were deployed in 2004. And your kids at that point were how old?
My son was 5 going on 6, and my daughter was 9, and she turned 10 while I was gone.
And how did that play out with them?
My son was a little young. He didn't quite understand what was going on, so every time I actually got to talk to him on the phone, which was not as common then as it is now, you know, not everybody mm-hmm. has their own cell phones, he would basically said, so when are you coming home, Mom? When are you coming home? My daughter, on the other hand, got to the point where she didn't even want to talk to me anymore. She felt abandoned. And so it took months after I came back to be able to cement that relationship again.
How did your husband deal with that? He was the main caregiver, wasn't he?
He was the main caregiver, and he basically, I think, took it day by day. And at the end of every day, it was my beginning of the morning, it was his end of the day, and he would send an email saying, I'm going to bed, and thank God I made it through another day.
Well, that's true. When I started looking at this topic, I started finding a lot of information out there. And I want to remind our audience out there, if you do have somebody that you want to wish a happy Mother's Day to, I keep putting these papers, too many papers in front of me, you can give us here a call at the studio at 877-573-7825. It's toll-free number, 877-573-7825. When I was looking at how these deployments are affecting families and so forth, I found a really interesting article, and I wasn't able to get the author on here, but her name is, she is a lieutenant colonel in the Reserves, and she's had 3 deployments herself, and her name is Mona Ternus, T-E-R-N-U-S, and she is a professor at George Mason University, and she did a study called, Study Finds That Mother's Military Deployment Affects Health of Women and Teens.
And I believe that.
And I was just wondering how was your health the whole year you were gone? Probably basically from a mental standpoint more than anything else.
From a mental standpoint, I probably went through phases. Health-wise, I think living in a desert, you don't have any germs. So I actually was not sick for the entire mm-hmm. time until I finally passed the flag to the next woman, who happens to be Colonel Ludwa, who we said mm-hmm. Happy Mother's Day to. And she... once she took the reins, I got sicker than I've ever been. So there was kind of probably this stress-filled, I will not get sick, I will not get sick the entire time that I was there. But mentally, I found that I had to completely divorce myself from being a mother while I was there, or else I would just feel mm-hmm. like I had... that I had abandoned my family. You know, there was that kind of feeling behind it. So a lot of the time I had a lot of work to do, so I would be... basically immerse myself into that work and not think about it. But the kids back home, of course, they don't have anything to think about except the fact that their mom is gone.
Right. And they would, some of the people that this woman had interviewed, they said that, they would get on the phone mostly with their daughters, unfortunately, and they would, somebody would start crying, and it was like, you can't wrap your arms around them and say, it's going to be all right. I'm going to be, I'll be home. And as you pointed out, that yours at some point didn't really want to talk to you
for
a while.
That's right.
And how did that happen how did that affect you when you got home? Did everything kind of return to normal, or was there a fear that you would leave again?
Well, there was definitely a fear that I would leave again. I think that when she first saw me, she was happy that I was back, and she gave me a hug and everything. And then she basically gave me a test. And the mm-hmm. tests, I think, lasted for a good 6 to 8 weeks until I finally turned on her one day when, I was in the emergency room one more time with her. And I said, do you think maybe you're doing some of this because you're mad at me? Mm-hmm. And she finally admitted, yes, I am.
So it's almost like everybody needs to be debriefed.
Right.
I guess that's not a bad question. Before you left, was there any family counseling or any offer to say, okay, now this is what you should, you know, how you should talk to your family about getting ready for this separation and maybe at the end?
Not really. You know, the National Guard tries. They have a family support group, but the family support group really does not coalesce until that unit is about to go.
Mm-hmm.
So what ends up happening is you have people who are scattered around the state and they don't know each other. And there is no way to try to get together except the night that we're getting onto the bus and leaving. So most of these people didn't know each other. Most of these people hadn't had the training. My husband had had some training, but he was kind of, you know, one person in a sea mm-hmm. of 27 other families. So they were basically having problems even trying to talk to each other, let alone talking to other people. I don't think that they do a really good job of preparing the families before they go. Of course, now that they're going over and over again, I think it's a little bit different. But then when they came back, before I came back, about a month before, they had a reintegration thing. But I don't think it was complete because they didn't really know what was going to happen when these families came back.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my second book, which we haven't talked about, I had my first book, which was about my deployment. The second book, which is going to be published by the Strategic Studies Institute of the War College, is about that redeployment, coming back home and trying mm-hmm. to figure out, number one, what my life is again, trying to reintegrate into the family, and the family trying to reintegrate with me.
Well, that'd be good to read because I enjoyed mm-hmm. reading your first book. And you tell us about your books. I forgot to do that.
Sure, sure.
But the first one, Colonel Cook has got an interesting sense of humor. So,
right. Well, Redeployment of the Jedi is not exactly a very funny book, I don't think. But the first one was Living on Tatooine, a.k.a. Kuwait. And it was about my deployment to Kuwait in 2004. And it was based on a series of emails that I had sent back home. I guess nowadays they would be blogs, but we didn't have blogs back then, or they were just starting. So I did these emails to basically let everybody know that I was still alive,
mm-hmm.
still functioning, and still had my sense of humor intact. The idea that I might laugh about this 10 years from now, so why not laugh about it now? So there were a lot of really dumb stories about insects and camels and, you know, whatever yeah. happened to come into my life that week. And then I took those and I combined them with information that I couldn't write over the email at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I published that as a book.
And people can get that where?
They can get it through Nicholas Books at nicholasbooks.com, or they can get it on Amazon, or they can contact me.
Okay. And how would they do that?
That's an interesting question. Probably call 734-769-7468, and we'll take care of it from there.
Okay. We'll get that information up on our website for you and put a link to Nicholas and also to Amazon. And in fact, I think if you go onto our website right now underneath the PX, I think the book is listed and we've got a little link to Amazon and you can go straight there and to get that. When you were deployed, and I know that you were in personnel.
Right.
And so you probably had other moms serving under you.
Yes, although not as many as you might think. We had 253 soldiers within my battalion, and of those, approximately 50% of them were female. But when you asked me this week what women right. I knew who had served overseas in the military, I sat there and started looking and thinking, no, she was single, she was single, she was single. I mean, a mm-hmm. large majority of them were single. So there were only a few that were actually wives and mothers. And in my own unit, there was two of us. And mm-hmm. so I tried to get that one person's name, but
right.
Yeah. So there were a lot of them that just didn't have to deal with that, at least in my unit.
Mm-hmm. Well, they talk about the ranks of the military increasing as far as women are concerned, and that there are more and more women serving, there are more and more women staying in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, maybe the first tour they didn't have any kids, and now the second tour is coming up and they've got kids. And I'm just wondering about this redeployment thing and how it affects the families, because the article that I was talking about referring to from George Mason talked about the issues of the redeployment and how it put this barrier, you know, between the mom and the kids.
Right.
And as you, we touched on the idea of this fear that they're going to go back.
Right.
And now what? And I wasn't able to get husband and wife come on to talk about this because there are many cases of where the husband and the wife are deployed at the same time.
Which is a real mess.
And, you know, the kids are being raised by grandparents or
guardians,
wolves, or, and, mm-hmm. you know, whoever happens to be out there. And in fact, there was a case recently where a woman tried to be exempt from a second tour because her husband was not available to raise the kids. And I think they had three children.
Right.
And that evidently in the military, you are allowed to petition for an exemption. And in this case, it was granted.
Right.
But in many cases, it was not.
Well, and there's also the second and third order effects of doing such a thing, because you get marked as a woman who doesn't want to deploy.
And then it gets really ugly. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit in the second half of the program, and probably I think I might do this early, is that I'm going to pull on our author for the second part, because this is part of her book also. Amy, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Amy. This is Dale.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm going to kind of pull you on a little early. I know this is kind of a surprise. I'm talking with Amy Strebe, who is the author of our book for the second half of the program, but we just got into an issue. Her book is called Flying for Her Country, American and Soviet Women Military Pilots in World War II. And Amy, I want to introduce you to Colonel Christine Cook.
Nice to meet you, Colonel.
Christine was deployed to Kuwait in 2004 for a year. She has two kids of her own. And we just got onto the idea of how it affects their career if they do not accept the assignment, I guess. That be the term?
Well, it's not like you can accept
a deployment.
I know
you can't turn it. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
But
when you ask for a hardship reassignment is basically what it's called.
Right. And Amy, I brought you on because in reading your book, you were talking about how these pilots during World War II, the American women pilots and the Soviet women pilots, how they were perceived as, you know, I mean, we're looking at gender identification 60 years ago. But that they had many of the same difficulties. People didn't take them seriously. Is that true?
Yes. In fact, a thing with the WASP, Women Air Force Service Pilots, there really wasn't many people who knew about them during the war, too. They were kind of kept a secret. Jacqueline Cochran, who started the program, obviously the WASP were America's first military pilots. And they it was kind of Jackie Cochran's experiment, if you will. So they were not known to really the general public, and really they weren't really known to a lot of the male pilots that were flying around, unless they happened to be stationed on the same base. But there wasn't really a lot known about them at the time.
Well, I was wondering, you know, how people would question, military people would question the commitment of women, especially wives. And I'll address this one to you, Christine.
Okay.
Because you've been in the military for 20 years, almost?
22, yeah.
22. She doesn't look like it, folks. in the military for 22 years. Have you ever run up against that?
Yes. I think that there are a number of people who, number one, to show their commitment, won't even get married. They will tend to be single until they retire, and then they go ahead and try mm-hmm. to have a family. By that time, it's a little late to be right. having kids. Or they will get married and have children very late in life so that they are mothers of 10-year-olds in their 50s. There's a lot of those.
Yeah, I mean, that would present a big problem. And Amy, going back to you, in all of the pilots that you talked about, they were all concerned about being professional, you know, and dedicated to their work and stuff, but they also wanted to maintain this feminine mother side to them, right?
Right, and there actually were some WASP and Soviet airwomen, too, who were mothers at the time. And, you know, they really had to, this was, you know, of course, over 60 years ago, and, you know, you didn't have the support of husbands that you do today. And a lot of them had to leave their, and a lot of them, of course, this was wartime, so a lot of the men were obviously out fighting, and they had to leave, you know, their children with their mothers and family members. So, yeah, it was pretty tough, and it was, the women obviously didn't have a lot of work experience at that time. A lot of women obviously were staying home in the 30s and 40s, but it was a real opportunity to do something for the war effort, the WASP already had to be pilots mm-hmm. To get accepted into the WASP program. And so they really jumped at the chance to be able to do something for their country, and obviously something that had not been done before in the United States. But it was tough. There were a lot of them who did have children and, had to have that kind of conflict that women go through today in the military, of leaving their families behind to do a risky job for their country.
Well, jump into the present then, and Christine, is the military becoming more accepting of moms in the military, or is there still that kind of that, I don't know, I don't want to use the word stigma, but it kind of, it's a word that jumped to my head.
Well, I think that when you look at the actual numbers of people, when, especially in my case, I'm an officer, across the board, there's 10% of the officer force that is female. Of those, even less of them are actually married and have children. And the ones that you do find are the ones who are the older lieutenant colonels, majors, and colonels, the occasional general. So you've got a situation where it's a very, very tiny group of people. I think in general, our up-and-coming generation, the millennials, if you will, are much more understanding of the concept of having a family and also being in the military. But my generation is not quite so understanding about that. And of course, we're the ones who are dealing with the fact that we're the wife mm-hmm. and mother, and so we are facing people who are still not necessarily positive about it.
That's a lot of roles to play.
Yes, it is. That and battalion commander, where I become the mother of 253 people.
That's true. That's kind of interesting because I was thinking about how I was at a seminar yesterday of Vietnam veterans, and we were talking to a group of students, and we had a nurse with us who had been in Vietnam and had stayed in the military for 20, 30 years almost. And she was talking about how she had to be a mother to her nurses and all the people that were, you know, under her. And we also had a lieutenant colonel who had been a commander of an assault helicopter company. And he said, I wasn't their father, I wasn't their mother, and all mm-hmm. these other things. And I'm going, that's kind of interesting how to work those things, because, you know, you always need some sort of somebody that you can go to say, I got a problem and I need to talk to somebody. And, you know, these, you know, Chesty Puller, you know, Bradley and all those other guys mm-hmm. weren't the type that you'd go up to and say, can I talk? I got this issue.
Well, that's what a sergeant major was for, right?
But yeah, he was even friendlier.
Well, yeah, sometimes they were. But I think that is a classic dichotomy between a men's leadership style and a woman's mm-hmm. leadership style. If I'm in a leadership position, I almost automatically think of it as being more of a mothering, nurturing role, and men do not. They have a tendency to say, you know, go attack that hill, and, you know, I'm not going to take no for an answer. And not that I would take no for an answer either, but I have a much more, you know.
Not quite as confrontational, maybe.
Exactly.
All right.
Teamwork. Teamwork.
The teamwork.
Let's all go attack that hill together.
We're talking with Colonel Christine Cook, and also talking with Amy Strebe, who is the author of Flying for Her Country. And when we come back after our break, we're going to be talking about that book. It's about American and Soviet pilots during World War II. If you have a question or comment that you'd like to make on the subject of more or less women in the military, give us a call today at 877-573-7825. We'll get you on the air. We'll address the question and see what we can come up with. I think I've always found it to be a fascinating topic, especially since we started doing Veterans Radio, and I'm running into more and more women veterans who, you know, not only were in Kuwait but have been in Iraq, and I teach at a community college, and I'm having women students come through that were pilots even. As Amy pointed out in World War II, it's not quite as unusual today as it was 60 years ago, you think? Have you ever had an opportunity, Amy, to talk to any current pilots?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, many of them. In fact, I belong to the Women in Aviation International organization, and last year they had their conference in San Diego, where I live, and it was wonderful. It was like, I think it was like 3,000 people were in attendance, and obviously the majority of them were pilots, and you had everything from civilian pilots, commercial pilots, military pilots, even from other countries. And, yeah, it was wonderful. So, yeah, I do. In this journey of writing the book, researching it, talking about it around the country, I met some really amazing women pilots that are just incredibly inspiring.
I want to talk more about that when we come back from our break. We're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour in about 15 seconds. So Let me just remind people, you're listening to Veterans Radio. We like to tell people that we are the voice of America's veterans, and we want you to give us a call. Let us know what's going on out there. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Bleek volunteered to accompany a reconnaissance patrol committed to engage the enemy and capture a prisoner for interrogation. Forging up the rugged slope of the key terrain, the group was subjected to intense automatic weapons and small arms fire and suffered several casualties. After administering to the wounded, Bleek continued to advance with the patrol. Nearing the crest of the hill while attempting to cross the fire-swept area to attend the wounded, he came under hostile fire from a small group of the enemy concealed in a trench. Entering the trench, he closed with the enemy, killed two with his bare hands, and a third with his trench knife. Moving from the emplacement, Bleek saw a concussion grenade fall in front of a companion and, quickly shifting his position, shielded the man from the impact of the blast. Later, while ministering to the wounded, a hostile bullet struck him, but, despite the wound, Bleek undertook to evacuate the wounded comrade. As he moved down the hill with his heavy burden, two enemy soldiers with fixed bayonets attacked him. Closing with the aggressors, he grabbed them and smacked their heads together, then carried his helpless comrade down the hill to safety.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.